Paranormal True Stories. Narrated by Paul Spera. The Roswell Incident. July 3rd, 1947. The summer sky over New Mexico in the southwestern United States is stormy. Flashes of lightning streak through the night, and thunder rumbles. In the early morning, Mac Brazel discovers metal debris strewn on the ground of his ranch in Corona. Unable to identify them, nor to understand their origin, he shows them to his neighbors, the Proctors. They can't identify them either. By mutual agreement, they decide to show them to Sheriff George Wilcox. Just as intrigued, the latter alerts the Roswell military base, which sends two soldiers to examine them, Major Jesse Marcel and Captain Sheridan Cavett. On July 7th, 1947, they themselves recover more debris and bring it back to the base. Colonel Blanchard, commander of the Roswell military base, has a security cordon put around the area covered with debris. The debris is picked up by the Army, transported to Roswell, and then to the Fort Worth base in Texas for examination. On July 8th, Lieutenant Walter Haut, spokesman for the Roswell Army Airfield, issues a first press release at the request of Colonel William Blanchard, commander of the base. A flying disc was found in Roswell. Newspapers and radio spread the news and imaginations run wild. For only a short time, however, because a second press release is quickly issued by Brigadier General Roger Ramey of the Fort Worth base, the debris found on the Corona Ranch was that of a weather balloon, not a flying saucer. In order to eliminate any suspicion, the Army organizes a photo session for the media. We see the famous debris, large pieces of crumpled metal. However, Mac Brazel, the rancher, interviewed by the Roswell Daily Record, refutes the military thesis. He declares that he knows what a weather balloon is because he's already collected them on his ranch, and what he found this time is not that. In 1947, there are few means to verify the explanations provided by the Army. Moreover, the media seems to believe the Army's official line. The Roswell case is closed. For a few decades. Beginning in the 1980s, witness accounts collected by ufologists reopened the Roswell affair. First, that of Major Jesse Marcel, the first soldier on the scene. He declares that the debris he collected himself and saw with his own eyes did not come from Earth. What sows even more doubt is that he claims that the press photos in which he poses with the debris are fake. What we see in those photographs is not the debris he brought back from the ranch. He states his belief that the military covered up the discovery of a spacecraft. For the photo that appeared in the newspapers, the recovered debris was replaced by metal from a weather balloon. By this time, few people remember the story of metal debris collected in Roswell. But now, an eyewitness has come forward, and a former military man at that. Ufologists begin to interview other people involved in the 1947 incident, and some of them have quite a bit to say. Lieutenant Walter Haut is more precise than Jesse Marcel. He also states that he saw the debris and believes it was made from an unknown and very strong metal. More importantly, he states that there was another location north of Roswell where debris had been collected. Colonel Blanchard, the author of the original press release stating that a flying saucer had been found, had taken Lieutenant Haut to a heavily guarded hangar. There, he saw something egg-shaped and two small bodies under a tarpaulin. The bodies had abnormally large heads. Lieutenant Walter Hout believes what he saw was a ship and its crew. Then comes the testimony of Glenn Dennis, 22 years old at the time of the events, and an employee of the funeral home in Roswell. He received a first phone call from the morgue officer of the military base who wanted to know the size of the smallest coffins available. During a second phone call, the same officer asked to know the details of the conservation of bodies that have remained several days in the desert. A few days later, Dennis says, he met a nurse from the military base. She told him that she witnessed the autopsy of some very strange bodies. Small gray skin, big heads and eyes, and only four fingers on each hand. As she was telling him about this experience, he could see that she was in shock and afraid. Glenn Dennis tried in vain to reach her a few days later. The young woman had disappeared, and he would never see her again. The thing about this Roswell affair is that, nearly half a decade later, it no longer resembles the original reports from 1947. Back then, it was a matter of debris from a flying disc. By the 80s, there's talk of spaceships and extraterrestrials. The story of the discovery of a vessel and the corpses of its pilots 50 miles away from Mac Brazel's ranch, where the metal debris was first sighted, appears only in 1980, with the publication of The Roswell Incident, co-written by Charles Berlitz, famous for his books on the Triangle of Bermuda, and by the ufologist William L. Moore. It is the starting point of the, let's say, embellished version of the Roswell affair. The authors become investigators and question witnesses, especially second-hand witnesses. Time seems to have had a loosening effect on the tongues. The ufologists do so much and so well that what had been perhaps only a doubt for some becomes a reality. Extraterrestrials have landed or crashed in Roswell. The army has recovered remains of the crash, including perhaps alien corpses, and has kept them hidden. If there is a lack of evidence, it's because it's been destroyed. If there's a lack of official testimony, it's because the army and the government impose a law of silence on all the protagonists that they can intimidate. In 1995, the ultimate proof appears on our television screens. A news dispatch from Agence France-Presse evokes a top-secret film shot nearly 50 years earlier. It shows the autopsy of an extraterrestrial after the crash of a flying saucer. In France, TV channel TF1 broadcast on October 23, 1995, in the program L'Odyssée de l'Étrange, hosted by Jacques Pradel, large excerpts from a film presented by Ray Santilli, a London producer, as the dissection of the Roswell alien. We see the corpse of a hydrocephalic and asexual humanoid, with a large belly and six fingers on each limb. Lying on an operating table, he has an impressive wound on his left thigh. Jacques Pradel explains that he investigated, is this film real or is it a hoax? He interviewed a number of specialists who, one after the other, explained in detail that this autopsy was real, particularly because of the realism of the details. Dr. Patrick Braun, an international surgeon in Paris, for example, says he is convinced that the autopsy was performed on a real body and not on a dummy. Dr. Braun and Dr. Josiane Pujol, forensic odontologist and forensic anthropologist, consider that no known pathology can explain such a set of malformations. The film ignites a media firestorm. The U.S. government comes out of the closet and issues two press releases. The first explains that the debris found in 1947 actually came from a then-secret government program called Project Mogul. It was designed to detect Soviet nuclear tests by sending clusters of 20 to 30 balloons tied together at high altitude. They carried two aluminum foil radar targets glued with adhesive paper to balsa sticks, then fell back down after a few hours of flight within a radius of about 50 miles from their launch base in Alamogordo, New Mexico. Roswell is in that radius. But the project was top secret, hence the Army's discretion at the time. The second communique explains that the extraterrestrial bodies found are, in fact, dummies used by the military to test parachutes. The problem is, these dummies were only used after 1953, 6 years after the crash. But then, what about the alien autopsy? If there are no aliens in Roswell, what is the creature dissected on the video? An alien, of course, because everything the American government says is a lie to hide the truth. On April 7, 2007, Warner Brothers released a story describing the story of a fake autopsy. The special effects in this story were done by John Humphreys, who had created latex creatures filled with sheep organs 12 years earlier to perform a fake autopsy on a Roswell alien. So it was a joke. What a shame. It did, however, make Ray Santilli quite a bit of money, and he sold his film very well. Skeptics who don't believe that spaceships carrying aliens crashed in Roswell accept the military's explanations of the Mogul project. A weather balloon or similar device is discovered on a ranch, and people who have never seen this type of device before think it is a flying saucer. It should be remembered that at the time, science fiction novels and short stories were pouring out little green men onto our poor planet. The most eloquent example of the influence of the media and of these stories is the radio version that Orson Welles gave of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds in 1938. Orson Welles was so convincing in his interpretation that he terrorized America, convinced that aliens were coming. But no explanation seems to overcome the convinced ufologists who regularly go back on the offensive. In 2002, the American TV channel Sci-Fi financed excavations on the site of the supposed crash in the hope of discovering debris that the military had not found. Nothing new was uncovered. In November 2005, an anonymous source claiming to be part of a high-level group of people in the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency posted information in UFO news groups about a certain Project Serpo. This information would confirm that in July 1947, there were two alien craft that crashed in the state of New Mexico, and that one alien survived. A line of communication would have been established between this extraterrestrial and his home planet. The extraterrestrial would have lived 5 years before dying in 1952. The communications with his planet would have continued and would have led to an exchange program between 1965 and 1978. There is no evidence to support these claims. In 2012, Adam Dew, an American sports journalist, receives some very old slides. On two of them, he sees extraterrestrial bodies. As an amateur ufologist, he contacts a few specialists who confirm this impression. The buzz grows around these slides that Dew keeps hidden. The media are having a field day, and lucrative showings are being organized around these slides. Unfortunately for all the amateurs of sensationalism from the sky, many skeptics showed that they represented children's mummies photographed in a museum of Colorado. No matter. For ufologists, they are the Roswell aliens. Today, the Roswell incident continues to generate money and interest. It is, of course, the tourist trade of this New Mexico town. We can have fun with it, but we can also point out that some simple questions remain without simple answers in this case. For example, in 1947, in the New Mexico desert, it was common to pick up debris from weather balloons, and ranchers knew what they were dealing with when they found it. Why, in 1947, did the locals and then the military, who first went to Roswell to examine the debris, mistake it for flying saucer debris and not a weather balloon? And why in the 1990s did the Army issue a statement to explain that the bodies found were in fact dummies? So there were bodies that needed to be explained. And that in 1947, there were several crashes, one with the mysterious debris picked up by Jesse Marcel, and another. What we can say is that something did happen in Roswell in July 1947. It is likely that the incident, whatever it was, would not have gained so much momentum if the United States Army had not affirmed, then denied, then confirmed, before going back on its declarations to demonstrate something else with the help of various reports, communiques, and accounts. A series of muddles that gave grist to the mills of conspiracy theorists around the world. What are they hiding? It is difficult to be categorical, but it's easy to make assumptions. And you? Now that you know as much of the story as there is so far to know, what do you think? Did you like this episode? Feel free to comment, share, and rate it. See you soon for new stories. Midnight Studio, addictive podcast creator.